Hello, and welcome to Media News Podcast with me, Mark Campbell. Media News aims to be an authentic voice, bringing you real truthful stories from the Middle East, with a particular focus on the Kurdish question that is often ignored, self-censored, or suppressed by the mainstream media platforms. Today, we have a very special edition of the Media News Podcast with an interview with a very special person with a very powerful story, and who is launching a new book of poetry called Brave Little Sternums. Welcome to Media News, Matt Broomfield.
Thank you. Hi, Mark.
Dembash. Hi. Dembash, Rojbash. Matt Broomfield is an award-winning poet and activist, journalist and writer who's recently spent 3 years living and working in Rojava, Syrian Kurdistan, or northeast Syria, however you refer to it, in solidarity with the women-led direct democratic revolution there. His debut poetry collection, Brave Little Sternums, Poems from Rojava, written in and about the revolution, is published July this month, 2022, by Fly on the Wall. Matt is also a co-founder of the Rojava Information Center, which if people want to find out a little bit more about his work at the Rojava Information Center, Sarah Glynn did recently a very in-depth interview with Matt about his work at the Rojava Information Center, the independent English language news source on the ground there in Syria. But this podcast is more focused on the book, although I'm sure Matt will touch upon his work at the Rojava Information Center. Matt's poetry has been published by the Tahoma Literary Review, Stand, Inc., Sweat and Tears, Agenda, Glass, and National Poetry Society, The Independent, and the Best New British and Irish Poets of 2021, among others. His poetry was shared across London by Poetry on the Underground, and he is a former FOIL Young Poet of the Year. Brave Little Sternums is his debut full-length collection. Matt, you write about yourself as a professional writer and journalist. My role was to help to co-found, this is your time in Syria, was to help to co-found the Rojava Information Center, the region's top independent news and research source. In this capacity, I was fortunate to risk far less than many other local and foreign volunteers, and to see the revolution from many sides, in many places, alongside many people. It was the most humbling, challenging, and moving experience of my life. So much primary colored propaganda and gray criticism has been written about Rojava, totally missing the real energy of the place. The revolution is living, ugly, beautiful, writhing, self-contradictory, hopelessly compromised, and utterly worth fighting for. Berhudan Jiane, Resistance is Life. Matt, you've dedicated this poetry book to Mehmet Aksoy Firazdar, a British Kurdish filmmaker, very good friend of mine, who was killed by ISIS in Raqqa on the 26th of September 2017, as well as to all those writers, journalists, and artists who have given their lives in the pursuit of truth in Kurdistan. Just a few of the many reviews that I found this morning. I have to say, I've completely immersed myself in your poetry this morning, and I've really ended up in quite sort of emotional turmoil. These poems, there is a human cry that is deeper than war or friendship alone. Broomfield has a precise pen, delicate emotions, and deep love of people. He refuses to accept war, the occupation of nature, looting, or destruction. As one enters into these poems, one sees a search for what is precious, the growth of nations, a desire for happiness, peace, equality, and for a world for everyone. These poems were written during Broomfield's time in our country, where he decorated each moment with golden words. Each poem expresses a different moment in the revolution. Each word returns to comradeship, and this book will be a gift to history. Broomfield's pen is precious, his feelings even more so. And that's by Nergis Ismail, a poet from Rojava. In true Brechtian style, this collection of poems exercises the reader's intellect to distill the moving insights and delights of a well-chosen metaphor or turn of phrase to describe the contradictions of living through the Rojava Revolution. And that's by Rahila Gupta, poet, writer, and activist. So once again, Matt, we're very honored and pleased to welcome you to Media News Podcasts. As I say, I have to say, like I hadn't, because I've been so busy myself, and I hadn't really sort of looked at the book yet, and I did this morning.
They're remarkable things.
Yeah, and really, it's just thrown me into turmoil. It takes me back, and, you know, it's like a washing machine. Like, you know, emotions are just like in a sort of tumble dryer, and I'm left feeling, really quite emotional. Now, I have to say that some people have probably heard parts of your story, which is incredible, but maybe a lot of people haven't. So perhaps a good place to begin is by inviting you, Matt, to tell us just a little bit, very briefly, of how you first came to the Kurdish issue, how you then happened to travel to Rojava, some of your experiences, and how you came up with the idea for the book of poetry, and how did that evolve?
Sure. Well, yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show, Mark. I really appreciate it. I guess like a lot of people, I first got to hear about what was happening with the Kurdish issue in North and East Syria during that time that you spoke about, the time of the war against ISIS, and was, like many people, interested by, you know, heard a bit that there was a new kind of political project that was going on there, and was following it. Where I really got involved was prior to that, I was working in Greece, working with refugees, with the No Borders movement, and there was a lot of Kurdish people there, including some people linked to the Kurdish political movement. And I was just very impressed by them, one or two people in particular, by their personality, by their seriousness, their dedication to do the right thing by not only their people, but the other people in the camp, which is a very difficult circumstance. And we ended up spending a lot of time together discussing. And, you know, they said to me, what's happening in Rojava is really unique. It's really interesting. It's really exciting. It's really important. And you should see it. It would be good for you to learn more about it. And I, as with the background that I have as a professional journalist, you might be able to help out. Then the trigger was, I then came back to the UK. The real trigger was the war in Afrin, as listeners will probably know, when Turkey invaded in 2018 and devastated and ethnically cleansed a large corner of the region. At that time, I decided to go out and got on a plane, like many foreign volunteers have, on the Never Never, and turned up in Kurdistan. And yeah, ended up, again, like many people, really falling in love with what was happening there, finding it, you know, very important, and being very lucky as well, I think, in terms of the people that I met and the opportunities that I had. You know, I had the chance to do some work that I felt was really worthwhile, to work with some really amazing people, both locals, Kurds, Arabs, and foreign volunteers. And yeah, ended up spending 3 years there. I did a couple of different things while I was out there. Obviously, in the beginning, just learning the language, learning the situation, learning the context, learning to tell all these different towns and all these different acronyms apart, which is like a language in itself.
And you speak fluent Kurdish, I believe, Matt, don't you?
Yeah. So then again, I was lucky in that I then spent kind of 6 months just with Kurdish people, in particular. Pretty much. So yeah, it wasn't much choice. If I wanted to
converse
bathroom or whatever, then I had to find a way to say it. So that was that. And then working with the Kurdish television, I had a documentary series on the local TV, which was fun and obviously a great opportunity to work with locals and do translation. And then some colleagues and I set up the Rojava Information Center. Yeah, as you said, it's kind of a whole story in itself, but an organization working in one way to try and work alongside the local press, which can be a bit more kind of activist media, a bit more focused on the Kurdish diaspora, leftists maybe internationally, and to try and set up something which was working on a more professional way, working as an NGO and really trying to, via the mass media, the BBCs, the New York Times, even the Fox News is, to reach.
I think this Fox News was a bit of an issue, wasn't it? I mean, I gleaned that from your Sarah Glynn interview that the Fox, you wanted to get on Fox News, and that
was. And we did it.
And you did.
But you know, it's important though, and I really,
of course, yeah,
you know, and I really believe that, and yeah, the movement out there gave us the opportunity to do that, and you know, use the fact that, you know, we speak the language, we know the context of how the media works in different countries, to try and, you know, just get a more kind of healthy conversation going on and a fairer, more open discussion about what's happening there.
I think, just to interject here, yeah. I think, you know, when Mehmet went out to Rojava after Turkey bombed the media center in Karakoç Mountain, he decided then to pick up his camera and he wanted to go and tell stories. And he was successful in a lot of the work that he did in reaching the international media. And I think it's very poignant that you dedicated, because you took that on, you took that work further and you developed it.
I didn't have the chance to meet Mehmet or in Kurdistan, of course, because he lost his life before I arrived. But one thing I did read before I went out was the letter that he wrote to his family, which was also published, explaining why he was taking the step, why he was, you know, risking his life, ultimately sacrificing his life in the cause of truth. And I think that was very inspiring for me. And for me, it's also, this is part of the point, know that what's happening there is not just solely about the kind of very important war and the armed struggle, but it's this, for better and for worse, it's a total experience and it's a total war. No, on the one hand, that means everyone is a target, whether they're like the 80-year-old guy like Turkey hit with a drone strike deliberately around Christmas last, whether they're, oh, the poet was actually hit in another drone strike just 2 months ago, which makes me think of that Auden line, like today for the youth, the poet's exploding like bombs. That's kind of really happening over there, or whether they're women's activists, ecologic activists, doctors, doesn't matter, Turkey will target all of them. But on the other hand, it's a united struggle, it's a united effort. And whether someone is, as many people do, engaging in an armed struggle against Turkey or against ISIS or against the Syrian regime, or whether they are working in another capacity, such as in the media, such as an artist, people there have a kind of respect it's one effort and it's one struggle. And people really prioritize art and culture as well. And, you know, these are things which are celebrated and put forward, and people really recognize that there's no point in just struggling if you're not also trying to build something new and to allow flowers to bloom and things to grow in the middle of that hardship.
So you were fully immersed in the whole of the Rojava Revolution experience. You were traveling to Raqqa and you were in meetings, you know, with sort of ex-ISIS sheikhs, talking about, you know, the benefits of the Rojava Revolution. You get that sort of intensity of your day-to-day life and, you know, the places that you were visiting and the things that you were experiencing. We've asked you to, if you could kindly choose four poems for us today, Matt.
Yeah.
It would be amazing if you could, just before each poem that you choose, that you have chosen for us, just give us a little bit of context about, that situation or that event or anything else really that you want to say about it.
For sure. I mean, I was just going to say that although obviously there were very intense moments, exciting moments, difficult moments, there were also a lot of very dull moments. There was one poem in here about WhatsApp, and I did basically spend most of those 3 years sitting in an office on WhatsApp. So it wasn't all most sure. of it wasn't particularly exciting or glamorous by any means. And as I said, yeah, also pretty safe, you know, I wasn't on the front lines of the war for most of it. But yes, it's got, you know, both things that I experienced and people that I met. You know, a lot of the book is also about, you know, stories that people told me, phrases, conversations that I had with people who've lived through so much, and that all kind of coming together and colliding. So three or four poems from the collection today.
So the first one you chose was Gazal, 80 kilometers from Şengöl City.
Yeah, that's right. So maybe I can explain a bit. So this poem is it's a kind of ghazal, or gazal, which is originally a Persian poetic form, but is also using the Kurdish tradition as well, and in the Arabic tradition. And so there's, as you will see, there's always a motif like the repetition of one word, which here is the word heval or comrade, which I just kind of did because it's at the end of every sentence in that you hear spoken over there. So I thought I would write a poem on that basis. And what was the most interesting thing to me about this form is the way that in classically each line should contain a kind of a contradiction. It should challenge itself, challenge its own message. And that I thought was a really good way of expressing their kind of the complexities and the different narratives and, you know, the challenges of the revolution. That, as someone said, you know, a real revolution is a mass of contradictions. And that's something you see every day. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly, that, as I said in my introduction, the ugly and the beautiful, the compromised and the worth fighting for are all colliding. So, yeah, this is a poem that I wrote. Just, I know it kind of, I guess, goes quite widely through different fields of the revolution. So, yeah, this is Ghazal. 80 kilometers from Shengal city. Not knowing your name, I call you Heval. By that name, I know you, Heval. The rebels announced they shot down a plane, but it was a drone, Heval. Militiamen muster, theirs, ours, mostly theirs, Heval. Coffins are carried down the Tel Kocher road, no matter how empty, Heval. Mothers will rail and reach for the coffin, no matter how empty, Heval. Copters crawl through the vast overhead, most likely the Yanks, Heval. They fly Pizza Hut pizza into their bases, or so telegram planes, Heval. Coca-Cola is a symbol of capitalist creep. We drink Pepsi instead, Heval. People go to the communes for benzines and bread, not for critical theory, Heval. Shaheen was Shaheed on the Deir ez-Zor front. He came here from France, Heval. On that same day, three Kurds were Shaheed. They were already here, Heval. 17 drowned in the Aegean Sea. They tried to be free, Heval. Hamid takes selfies with Mazdas in Athens. He tries to be free, Heval. Graffiti in Karmishlo says, I will not go, as though there was a choice, Heval. The UN says they make use of suicide bombings, but none wanted to die, Heval. Not all Kurdish women are fearsome guerrillas. Some of them are, Heval. The BBC says these women want to be free. They already are, Heval. 90% of Kobani fell to the enemy, but it did not fall, Heval. Without a choice, they continued to fight, as though there was a choice, Heval. We have come so far and no further. We have come so far, Heval. Yeah. We have an audience. People can applaud at home if they wish.
So the next one is for Evrin Khalif, who was a Kurdish politician who was murdered by Turkish sponsored gangs on the M4 highway during the Turkish invasion.
This poem, as you said, this poem is about this incident, which people again will quite possibly be familiar with, where during the opening days of the invasion, she was dragged out of a car, beaten, assaulted, and shot dead by members of a Turkish-controlled group, Ahrar al-Sharqiyya, acting on Turkish orders. A group which, by the way, have been sanctioned by the US Treasury and been documented recruiting former ISIS members, but somehow this doesn't get back to their paymasters in Istanbul. So this poem is about, you know, it's about that incident, but it's also about the work of Hevrin, a very beloved figure, and was someone particularly who was kind of working actually to, so these people who killed her were part of a Sunni Arab militia, and Hevrin was someone who was part of a party called the Sharia's Future Party, which was working particularly to try and build bridges and mend the very difficult sometimes relationship between the Kurds and the Arabs in the aftermath of long-term repression of the Kurds under the Ba'ath regime, and after ISIS's attacks on the Kurds, also after, you know, errors on part of the Kurdish-led administration as well. And that's a really important work. I met Hevrin once or twice, or, you know, shook her hand and heard her speak. And of course, she spoke very well.
And the poem is also about the Rojava, your work at the Rojava Information Centre.
It's partly about that. And then it's also about the, you know, sort of this distance and the which is true if you're writing poetry or if you're writing journalism, maybe especially so somehow for journalism. And it's a real kind of one of the themes in this book, I think, you know, the difficulties of being there, you know, and not just being a journalist, you know, more than that, being part of what's happening there, working with the people there, you know, everyone you love is there, your friends are there, and you're all facing the same threat. But at the same time, there's this this distance now, and you kind of, you just want to, maybe you just want to dash to the front line and chuck yourself in front of the next strike. I don't know, but there's work to be done, and that, and those kind of difficulties. So yeah, this is a poem. It's just called For Hevrin Khalif. The temptation is to elide, normalize or overindulge, and not to inhabit. But this is our work, to dwell in the wound of the occipital pit, not only to trace gravel in flesh, flight of the fighters, kickback and bruise, but to reconstitute from post-mortem proofs. A life riding, who are we? Speak a phone with an aunt whose well has drawn dust these 8 years of the smoke, to remake the meat of the leaky stove sit down in unfriendly times, to people the portraits, flashbulb caught in their prime, with bellies and pamphlets of shrewd recommendations and twinklings of grief, for the young are so ready to hemorrhage freely, to become uninhabited, lighter than smoke. The truth is not the sum of abrasions, but the abrasions attest to the truth. Thank you.
And then we move on to, we were going to do another one, but for time's sake, For Our Enemies is the next one. And what's the context of that one?
So this is another poem that I wrote during the war. So this is the 2019 Turkish invasion. So I arrived after the 2018 invasion during the tail end of the war against ISIS, that is also covered in the collection. And as viewers will remember, Donald Trump pulled his troops out, giving the green light for Turkish invasion at the end of 2019.
Serikani.
Spring. Against the invasion of Serikani and Tel Abyad. And so this collection, this poem I actually wrote just before the war started, and it was, you know, a very chaotic time. We knew that this invasion was coming and everyone was running around in their different capacities, trying to prepare everything, get ready for the coming blow against the region. At that time, we didn't know if it was going to be a total war that was going to completely eradicate the region, if we were all going to be driven into the desert, or, you know, nobody knew. And in that kind of very chaotic, sleepless time, I happened to come to a base near the front lines, where there were some old friends, comrades of mine, people that I hadn't seen for a year or two. and hadn't expected to see there, and we had the chance to kind of sit together, spend some time, drink a cup of tea, eat some food, and, you know, have a couple of, you know, very nice, calm hours in the middle of this chaos. And it was at a point when I was, you know, I was thinking that somehow and I think this is also one of the themes in the collection, that, you know, our weakness is our strength now. It's the fact that this region has stood up to NATO's second largest army, despite not having any resources, and is willing to do that anyway, and knowing that it's going to face an attack that it ultimately can't resist, that has won it such support and has won it this kind of international backing from people, ordinary people all over the world, I mean, not from governments. And that's kind of that weakness and strength is another one of these contradictions and strength and weakness that's really at the heart of what's happening there, I think. And so, yeah, I wrote this poem about that. It's called For Our Enemies. We hate how we're made to beg for it all, what we scrabble after, what we thirst for as it spills. We hate how dear friends have unbuckled themselves, how centripetal the weight of the times we have failed. We hate the way that we kiss on both cheeks, as if to check how much meat remains on the bone, and how grateful we are for the extra hour snatched below blankets in the safe house, the beans slow to come to the boil, for the drone which pins us down in this culvert together, heat-seeking the burning of our calves, for our paths which, though threaded through black gaps between checkpoints, nonetheless contrive to coincide. Despite all pressures to the contrary, then, we have nonetheless contrived to stay alive. Thank you, Mark.
And coming on to the last one, I added on, actually. I had an intimate sort of connection to the story of Anna Campbell. I was a liaison, working as a liaison between the family and the YPG And have got to know Dirk Campbell, Anna's father, really very well. And so I chose this one for you to end on. Anna, of course, who went to Rojava, she went, I mean, it must have been just before you arrived, I guess. She went to help evacuate civilians from Afrin and fell as a result of a Turkish airstrike on the 15th of March, 2018, aged 27. So would you like to give us a little bit of an introduction to this, Matt?
Yeah.
And actually, sorry. And then if you could also tell us where we can, because we'll probably end on this poem. Because it's obviously going to be very emotional. But could you tell us where people can find your book, for example?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, let's do that, and then let's finish with the poem. So, this is the book.
Yeah.
Brave Little Sternums, Poems from Rojava by myself, Matt Broomfield. It's released on the 8th of July. You can order it now. It will probably come to you now. The best thing is either to order it direct from the publishers, fly on the wall, or to go, maybe even better, go to your local independent bookstore and they will be able to order it for you. It's on, you know, all the systems and they can order it in. And it's nice to support independent bookstores as well. It is also on Amazon and Waterstones if for whatever reason either of those others work. But through indie bookstores or from the publishers is always best. If I'm not sure when this will go out, but I'm also performing across the UK in the coming weeks in a few places. I'm performing the kind of launches in London on the 30th of June, performing again in London on the 14th of July, performing in Hastings 21st of July, Bristol on the 5th of August, and possibly a couple of others. But if people follow me on social media, if you search for Matt Broomfield, Twitter or Instagram, then you will find me. Sharing all
that. We'll add it on the page as well, your contact details.
People can find that if you would like to buy the book, that's great, and just to read and learn more about one person's perspective, but more about something which is so big and encompassing so many people. And that's also one of my aims with this book now, as well as sharing things that I kind of felt and I couldn't express there in my capacity as a journalist, but I felt in my capacity as a human, is also, of course, to introduce people to some of what's happening there and some of the kind of realities of what's happening on the ground, like beyond the headlines. There are several, quite a few poems here that are kind of dedicated to people. Some of them are personally written for two people that I knew and that I was with. And some of them are written to people that I don't know and I didn't meet, such as other Kurdish figures, for example, who died, who gave their lives in the struggle before I'd heard of it, but who are still kind of very important. Anna, as you said, sort of the British woman who gave her life resisting the Turkish invasion, is someone that I didn't meet. Some very good friends of mine were very good friends with her, and of course, it's an amazing story, and I think it's something that you see really clearly when you go over there. That all the international people who gave, you know, all the locals as well, but all the international people, of course, who gave their lives are really remembered, and that sacrifice is not forgotten by anyone. And particularly someone like Anna, who was, you know, also an amazing person by all accounts, had an amazing personality, a very strong woman. There's so much stuff named after her, and wherever you go, people will be like, oh, I met someone from Britain, this woman, I've got a picture with her, she was so kind and nice, and, you know, a great kind of ambassador, I guess, for us British people over there, among other things. It's quite a simple poem, I suppose, that I wrote on the anniversary of Anna's death for a kind of ceremony we had over there to commemorate her. So the poem's called For Anna Campbell, Helene Karachoch. Helene Karachoch is her Kurdish name. We would, but we will not, because we cannot do that. After that, we would. We would not rest until we had. But our enemies are, so we cannot do that either. Above all, we would also, in our thousands, we would also, Believers have our, at any cost we would also, but your body is not. We cannot even do that. You said, if you love your own enough to fight for and to die for, and you must love your own enough to fight for and to die for, you have to love the far from enough to fight for and to die for. Your saying weighs upon. Every day it weighs upon. We cannot enough. We cannot enough. We can only this and that, in little towns here and there, which hug the border though it burns, which you fought for and died for and made chai for and were for. We can only house by house, woman by woman we can. Until we die for, until we cannot. Until we die for, or until. Shade Namam.
Matt, it's so wonderful to speak to you today. Thank you so much for sharing your poems and for the book, which is absolutely, you know, absolutely such a powerful collection of poems, which I urge everybody to get their hands on and to share. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Not just for today, but thank you so much for all of the work that you have done. You know, I think people like Mehmet Aksoy and Anna would be very proud of you and the way that you have continued to highlight the positive aspects and the sacrifice of all the shades and the Rojava revolution. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Mark. Yeah, well, we're all struggling for the same cause, and we will continue. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Matt. Take care. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.